Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I'm talking with one of our very own Homeopathy World Community members and national expert in vaccination and the law, attorney at law Alan Phillips. Today is August 24th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 79. I may have to give him a moment to get on the line and make sure it looks like he's with us. So, Alan, can you hear me?
I can.
Wonderful. Well, usually I start off with a couple of inspirational quotes to get us off on the right foot to begin our talk. So I will start with something that comes in from Twitter from a person called Love, Peace, Unity. She says, he or she says, I experience Twitter as another dimension, a timeless vortex of info, a stream of consciousness. And I can't agree with her more. And this is why I have put out lots of notices for people to listen to our show this morning from wherever they are in the world. Another one coming in from Verified Truth and retweeted by Balaram and Nayak says, humor, this is kind of humor or truth in my mind. It says, some minds are like concrete, all mixed up and permanently set. So you can take that or leave it. And one more from Zig Ziglar, the foundation stones for a balanced success are honesty, character, integrity, faith, love, and loyalty. And I am so pleased to bring you onto the show today to do something a little bit more unusual than our typical study of the Organon. However, it really fits right in because we were just studying all about the Organon, you know, about vaccinations and how Hahnemann himself had made so many discoveries about the cowpox and smallpox and the effects on human beings during his day and age, and I don't know that it is much different today. So a little bit more of an introduction for you, and so that people who are not familiar with who you are. Alan, I've known you for many, many years. We studied homeopathy together in Durham, North Carolina. We have talked back and forth over the years, and I've seen how you have been more and more involved with the vaccination issue and your concern about the health and welfare of human population and family members and all those who are involved in the repercussions of vaccination. And to let people know that you are one of the nation's leading vaccine rights attorney, that you advise individuals, families, other attorneys, groups, and organizations by your speaking engagements. You're always traveling all around the United States and speaking about vaccine exemption and waiver rights. You support the legislative initiatives that are aimed at expanding vaccine freedom of choice, and are very involved with health freedom and health rights in the state and elsewhere. And in addition, you have been published internationally on vaccine health and legal matters, and you appear all the time at these rallies and conferences on the radio and television discussing vaccine rights. You're also a regular featured guest on Freedomizer Radio and Liberty News Radio. And most people might know you from the famous book, Dispelling Vaccine Myths. That was actually an article, and it was published around the world, translated into Russian, Chinese, and several European languages in the late 1990s. Maybe we'll touch a little bit upon that and what you have written in that article. Is that enough of a intro for you?
That's fairly comprehensive and very flatteringly spoken. Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate it.
Okay. So I want you to know that this is a platform for you to get your message out, to create more awareness about what's going on, especially in the 2010-2011 swine flu, or it's not a pandemic anymore. They're preparing us for what could be another influenza season, and how the governments and drug companies and medical associations are preparing, how we're getting ready for this upcoming season, which hasn't started already.
Yeah, not officially. It is interesting to me that, and what I saw as the so-called pandemic played out, were just a number of contradictions between facts and policy. And the policy just seems to continue on bold-headed and blinded to the realities of what has gone on and what is going on, and in great contradiction to what has gone on. And so my focus in the most recent months, my primary focus, has been looking at the swine flu pandemic. And as you know, I've just released a report, about a 7 or 8 page report with over 70 referenced sites, sort of documenting what has happened, the primary concerns and issues, and how this played out, and the, in some cases, just blatant contradictions between policy and reality. And that was actually a subtitle for that Dispelling Vaccination Myths article that you mentioned. As I say that now, I recall this is not a new theme for me about the contradictions between policy and reality, but this is something that has been a concern of mine ever since I first stumbled onto the vaccine issue about, 16, 17 years ago, I guess, at this point. And my status as an attorney is actually a result of my concern, primarily my concern about vaccines. I went back to school after 17 years and picked law school because of my concern about vaccine issues. And so it's very much a personal passion as well as part of what I do professionally.
Right. Yes, you have really made a turn in your life from being, most people don't know, a singer, composer, and very, very talented individual, into a different area of healing people and helping people and supporting people through the legal road that is, people can have some determination and decision making for themselves as to what they're going to do with their families in terms of vaccinating. And can you please give us a little bit of information about what the policies are and what you feel the reality is?
Well, sure. And as an attorney in North Carolina, I'm focused on laws here in North Carolina and around the United States. And Debbie, just as I'm sure you and I would agree, for someone to make an informed decision about vaccination, generally, there's some minimum body of information that one should be aware of, which, of course, includes information beyond what we get from our health authorities and the mainstream medical community. I think nobody is probably more aware of that than the homeopathic or homeopathy community. We deal with that all the time in this arena in one form or another. But similarly, I have discovered and believe that in order to make informed decisions about vaccine exemptions and waivers, there's a minimum body of information that you need to have to really understand your rights And I have not found that available anywhere. There are a lot of websites with great information about the health risks and concerns and reasons you might want to postpone or forego vaccinations altogether. But once you decide that, at least here in the U.S., because vaccines are mandatory here as a starting point, legally they're mandatory, and then the next question is, are there any kind of exceptions to the mandate, and if so, who qualifies and when and how? But when I've gone out on the internet and looked at sites, even highly reputable ones from alternative medical doctors or vaccine book authors, I find that the overwhelming majority of time, when they start talking about vaccine rights, about exemptions and procedures, they end up ultimately with a mixture of accurate and inaccurate information. And some people are actually losing their rights by relying on information from the internet. So I'm in sort of the curious position of not only trying to help people exercise their rights when they would like to have that help, but helping people to understand whether or not and when they need help or assistance from an attorney or otherwise. So I wrote an ebook, The Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, which is available on my website, the vaccinerights.com website. It's the only source of information I know available anywhere that goes in-depth in introducing vaccine legal exemptions and waivers in a variety of different contexts, and provides that sort of minimum body of data or information that one needs to be able to make informed decisions. Now, a lot of people, the question, how do I legally avoid vaccines, comes up in, by my count, around a dozen different arenas or areas or contexts here in the U.S., the most common, of course, concerning schools and children being enrolled in school. And there are different kinds of exemptions. And in a lot of states, you just turn over a form and check a box. Nobody needs to buy an ebook or hire an attorney to do that, of course, although there still is information that would be helpful for a lot of those people to know about their rights and the boundaries of their rights. And unfortunately, those are not short answer questions, especially with religious exemptions, which are the most widely available exemption and or waiver, and the most legally complicated, because they often involve a mixture of state and federal rights. And the way that the boundaries are determined has to do with legal precedent, which applies differently depending on where you live and the specific facts in each person's situation. So it is regrettably inherently complex. But there are situations where people really do need to have more information, where it's not just check a box and get on with your life. And so my website has a lot of free information. I have the ebook, and of course I do consultations with people and attorneys and others, as you mentioned, around the country whenever that's desired and helpful.
Yes, and we have the link on to your ebook on the Homeopathy World Community website. And I also wanted to let you know that probably a lot of listeners are going to be outside of the United States. A good number will be in the United States. And I don't know, did you mention that each state, do they have different laws, or is it federal laws?
Well, that's a really good question, and the answer is that you can almost predict this answer to virtually any question when you ask it to an attorney. The answer is it depends, and it depends, and often there's a mixture of state and federal law when it concerns religious exemptions here in the U.S., because religious exemptions invoke First Amendment federal constitutional rights. There's part of our First Amendment refers to the what's called the Free Exercise Clause, or the Free Exercise of Religion. It's not an absolute right, but it is a powerful federal right. See, here in the U.S., the federal government does not have the authority to mandate vaccines for state residents directly. Now, the CDC makes its recommendations, and often individual states will enact those recommendations into law, but it ultimately is up to the individual states to decide what vaccines are mandatory, when and how, and what exemptions are available, and so forth. And so, but there are many federal jurisdictions where it is purely federal law, such as immigration, the military, U.S. territories, Washington, D.C. Those are all federal law or other than state law. And so, again, it really just depends on what context you're talking about as to whether it's a state law matter, mixture of state and federal law, or federal law matter. And, again, that's part of the, again, if unfortunate or regrettable, nonetheless part of the inherent complexity in legally on the topic. But there's another complexity. There's another complexity I want to throw out that really has been the primary concern for me, because last summer and fall I started getting calls from people all around the country saying, how do I avoid the swine flu vaccine if that becomes mandated? And I had not had occasion to take a close look and investigate emergency rights until that time. And so when I started doing that, I started looking at emergency health laws, and it turns out that most states have laws that if an emergency vaccine is declared, or if a vaccine is declared, is mandated during a declared emergency, exemptions go out the window. And so those of us who are already concerned about routine immunizations, and of course as homeopathic supporters or practitioners, many of us are certainly at least aware of homeoprophylaxis, I think, as I understand it, and I'm not a homeopath, I'm a fan of homeopathy, of course. I'm a member of Homeopathy World Community and proud to be so. But as I understand it, there's some difference among practitioners in the homeopathic community about when and how homeoprophylaxis maybe should be applied or used. But in any event, regardless of one's opinion or perspective on that, we know that that's an option at least. And from what I've seen, a far more effective one and less costly and doesn't have the concerns about adverse effects and so forth. But at any rate, those of us who are already concerned about routine immunizations, there are even more concerns about emergency vaccines, because they're usually fast-tracked, and that is because of the state of declared emergency at the national level. The federal agencies can then, the FDA, for example, in its licensing procedure, that's the agency that licenses vaccines for use in the U.S., they can skip some of the safety procedures that are required for routine immunizations. They can manufacture the vaccines more quickly, and the alleged presence of an emergency gives them legal justification to skip some of the usual procedures, which means we're actually using an experimental vaccine that has maybe little or no testing, and is probably, frankly, or there certainly is the chance that it's even less safe or more problematic than the routine immunizations. And yet, because of the state of emergency, if one is declared in any individual state and the vaccine were to be mandated, we have potentially greater risk but less freedom of choice to say no thank you. And so this concerned me very much. I also realized that most states' laws allow unvaccinated people in the context of a declared emergency. If you say, I don't care if there's no exemptions, I'm not taking this darn vaccine, they can say, fine, but you have to be quarantined. And they get to decide where the quarantine takes place. Now, this is all a function of the laws and the specific wording of the laws. It's going to vary state to state. But from what I've seen so far, most states can mandate vaccines in emergency without exemptions. In some cases, even throwing medical exemptions out the window, and that is particularly perplexing to me legally. But in any event, quarantine us, and in their discretion, if they deem it necessary, put us in the government facility. That is, they get to decide where the quarantine will take place. All of these are concerns. Now, there are probably, to one degree or another, parallel concerns in many other countries. A lot of other countries don't mandate vaccines, and I do not have knowledge of whether or not or to what extent vaccines can be mandated in the context of a formally declared emergency in other countries. And so I'll just have to apologize for listeners outside the U.S. that my focus and knowledge is really on within the U.S. But certainly there are...
Alan, we can ask them to chime in on the network and post comments if I put a blog up regarding other countries and laws are and how they handle it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. I was just going to say that would be really good information to have. But I think on a practical level, whether or not there's a technical legal mandate, there certainly is a lot of pressure from governments and the pharmaceutical industry, and often those two are working hand in hand with one another, and that raises a separate issue we can go into a little bit if you want about the conflicts of interest or outright corruption that exists at higher levels of government around the world, and insofar as there being people involved mm-hmm. in government or heavily influential who have interest financially and otherwise in the sale and promotion of vaccines. But in any event, regardless of the legal technicalities, there certainly is high pressure to coerce people into vaccinating. And what we've discovered with this past pandemic, which turned out to be and has been acknowledged by some reputable mainstream sources to have been a non-existent pandemic, and therefore all of the emergencies that were declared were also really non-existent emergencies. But the potential mandate vaccines is real, whether the emergency is real or not. And New York even temporarily did mandate swine flu vaccines mm-hmm. for healthcare workers for a while.
Well, when you mentioned that that non-existent swine flu pandemic from last year, they had I don't know how many umpteen millions of doses of vaccinations that were sitting in stockpiles and were not being used and going out of date. What I understand is they've made a new vaccination for this upcoming influenza season, which is a combination of many different years of flu, the diseased matter, and now it's all a combination. It's all mixed up, and as you said, it has not been thoroughly tested. And I was wondering if there's I want to know if there's any steps that we can take or if we need to be involved in your pandemic response work that you're doing. And one other note is that there is information in India. There's a big advertisement that says prevent flu-like illnesses through homeopathy. So there's one country in the world that promotes homeopathy. With the Central Council of Research in Homeopathy in the Department of Ayush, Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. And so they are recommending to use particular homeopathic remedies in lieu of the vaccinations. So
I just love that. I have a very personal opinion about the use or lack of use of allopathic medicine, but professionally, I think it's important to have all of the available options on the table and for people to be able to make and to strive to make informed choices. And then from there, you know, whatever happens is whatever happens. But to know that there's at least one government of a major nation in the world that recognizes that the allopathic approach is only one of many approaches is just wonderful. I would love to see that kind of a model adopted here in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world so that people really truly have the ability to make informed choice. I expect most of your listeners are already familiar with the homeoprophylaxis that they used in Cuba in the fall of 2008 with a leptospirosis outbreak there. 5 million doses to 2.5 million people, and they had profoundly better results than they'd had previously using conventional allopathic immunizations, and no deaths, whereas prior years they'd had many, many, many times the incidence and deaths from leptospirosis, and of course virtually no, if not literally no adverse events, and a fraction of the cost, something like 1/15 the cost of allopathic immunization. So from a pure objective point of view, homeopathy really looks like a much better way to go if that experience with leptospirosis is any indication of the effectiveness of homeoprophylaxis for other infectious diseases. And, of course, as you probably know better than me, Debbie, it's homeoprophylaxis has been used successfully around the world for, a couple of hundred years now at this point. So there's plenty of other instances, documented instances, to suggest that it could be very effective with other infectious diseases as well. But that's not what drives it. And part of the reason that the report I read that was talking about this situation in Cuba, part of the reason that they were able to do that is because Cuba was not yet controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, to sort of paraphrase and put in my own words. And apparently, despite efforts to the contrary, I'm sure, India has managed to maintain a certain amount of independence with regard to healthcare options for its people and population. And it just makes sense on so many levels to allow and promote any demonstrated effective approach.
Right. And you would think that if governments and the medical associations really, really wanted to do some scientific research, they would look further into homeopathy, because in our books, in our reference books, there are 33 rubrics listed in the complete repertory under vaccination, generalities of vaccination, and specifically about particular disease injections of diphtheria, yellow fever, meningitis, smallpox, typhus, and just in general, vaccination prophylactic. And anybody can look these up and find out there are many, many homeopathic remedies that have been used as actually follow-up after the side effects. And if you look at side effects that are listed in their own documentation, they are many. And I think at another date, maybe you'll come on again and talk about the autism link to vaccinations, and because you probably have a lot of information about that. So we only have about 3 minutes left, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to, again, tell us where people can reach you, what your latest work is with the pandemic response, and where they can jump in to be help and to help create awareness about the vaccination issue.
Sure. And first, Debbie, just thanks for having me on. It's a real pleasure and honor to be with you today. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak to your community and to be a part of World Homeopathy Community Online. I have two different websites. The first is vaccinerights.com, and that has information about vaccine exemptions and waivers in a variety of different contexts here in the U.S. and is concerned with my that part of my law practice where I assist people legally avoiding immunizations. The Pandemic Response Project that you referred to during the show today is a separate website, although it's linked from the homepage of vaccinerights.com. So the only URL folks need to really write down or remember is vaccinerights.com. There's a link on there to the Pandemic Response Project. The Pandemic Response Project is a project whose goal is to reform America's emergency health laws, primarily at the state level, but ultimately at state and federal levels, because current laws allow vaccines to be mandated without exemptions during a declared emergency, and for people to unvaccinated people to be quarantined, potentially in government facilities. And many of us familiar with the vaccine issues just feel that that is wrong, that that's overreaching. I've just written a report that is posted online at the Pandemic Response Project website. It is pandemicresponseproject.com, all the words spelled out. And that report is a recap of all of the problems during this recent so-called pandemic. And then that, both as an information piece, but also as a tool that can be given to state legislators or state and federal legislators as support for the need to reform emergency health laws to give us a little more freedom of choice, to be able to say no thank you to immunizations. Am I out of time?
Yeah, you've done really good, and I want to thank you for filling in for Vera today. And Vera will be back next session with me tomorrow. We have been really enlightened about U.S. law and a little bit about outside of the United States, about vaccine rights, and to take note and inform yourself about the upcoming flu season. So I want to thank you again, and we're going to say goodbye to everyone until tomorrow. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.